And he walks out right in bold sight and says, you know, whom seek ye? They answered him, Jesus of Nazareth. And Jesus said unto them, I am.
Pastor Breadmenter, reflecting on a moment of powerful submission.
He knew the answer, who they were looking for, but how thankful I am for the Garden of Gethsemane, because it would be right here that the whole situation where Christ would be crucified for the sins of the world, it would all take place right here. He's doing all this purposefully and willfully. He was obedient even to the death of the cross.
In the fateful encounter in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus boldly stepped forward, declaring to those who came to arrest him, I am the one you're looking for. This powerful scene reminds us that Jesus willingly gave himself up. Even in betrayal, he remained sovereign, yet demonstrating obedience to the Father's redemptive plan. Here's Pastor Breadmenter now with today's word.
It's been said that Christians are a lot like tea bags. You don't know what they're made of until you put them in hot water. John chapter 18, we see Peter going to be put in hot water. But to compare and contrast, we're going to see Jesus put in hot water. And we're going to see, you know, how Jesus deals with this most difficult time of his life. But he is God in the flesh, and so he's a perfect example to us. Whereas Peter, not so much. Peter's often, before the Holy Spirit comes upon the church in Acts chapter 2, poor Peter's the example most of the time of what not to do. But he will come around, just like you. Maybe you feel like a bumbling, fumbling fool, like Peter sometimes. I think a lot of us, we do sort of recognize Peter in ourselves sometimes. But there's good news. The Lord's going to work on you, and he's going to chip away, and then he'll fill you with the Spirit, and then you'll start doing stuff that's way past your own skill set. That's what we see in Peter. But we're going to see how he thought he was going to react. Remember, I'll stand with you, Lord. I would never let anything happen to you, Jesus, he said. But we're going to see how that doesn't really work out. And Jesus already knew how Peter was going to react. We read that in previous chapters. But the past five chapters of our study have been in one room. Reminds me, remember, do you guys remember the movie 12 Angry Men? It was filmed in one jury room, the whole movie. And if you were able to endure just one scene for the whole movie, it was actually kind of interesting. These jurors were debating about this one case and all that. But in a way, we've spent the last, you know, couple months now in one room, the upper room, where it started with Jesus washing the disciples' feet. We'd see the upper room discourse there in chapter 14, where he began to speak the last kind of lessons he wanted to give to the disciples. You know, chapter 14, 15, and 16, upper room discourse. And then we see in chapter 17, we saw the prayer that Jesus prayed there just before they left the upper room. So this has been a long, you know, section of the Bible. Five chapters of the Gospel of John, just one evening, one dinner, one room. That's what we've been seeing so far. But now we change the scene from the upper room to a whole different thing. We begin in verse 1 of chapter 18. It says in John 18, verse 1, when Jesus had spoken these words, he went forth with his disciples over the brook Kidron, where was a garden into the which he entered and his disciples. Okay, just a few points of geography. The Kidron Valley, it's where Jesus would go down the valley Kidron and then up the Mount of Olives. But just as you'd start to make your way up the Mount of Olives, you'd come to the place called Gethsemane, which is where Jesus would oftentimes get away from the crowds and the multitudes and the hubbub of Jerusalem. And it was a place kind of outside of the city walls. But interesting, the word Kidron, the Greek word, means turbid or murky. The little creek that was down in the Kidron Valley, the Kidron Brook, was called murky. Now, why was it called murky? Well, a lot of scholars believe it had to do with what happened there on the Temple Mount. There on the Temple Mount, that's where they would slay the lambs on the altar in the temple. Now, during Passover, there would be a lot of people there celebrating Passover, and Josephus writes in his works of Josephus that on Passover in Jerusalem during the first century, each year during Passover, 100,000 lambs would be slain there on the Temple Mount. one right after the other. Can you imagine on one day that many sheep being slain there? And it was a bloody, kind of horrible sort of thing. But blood would flow, as Josephus writes, from the Temple Mount. Blood would flow from those lambs being slain down the Kidron Valley, and it would make the Kidron Brook turn red with blood, murky, if you would. So that's one of the reasons they believe it's called murky, is because from the time of Solomon, thousands of years ago, even to the time of Christ, they were celebrating Passover on the Temple Mount. What's interesting about that is Jesus went down to Gethsemane. The name Gethsemane means olive press. What's fascinating, if you go there a certain time of year, if you pick an olive off the trees and you crush the olive, it looks blood red. I think there's all kinds of imagery there, but this is where Jesus would go when he wanted to get away from Jerusalem. Interesting, we're going to read where Judas knew exactly where to go after the Last Supper. Where would Jesus go after the Last Supper? He knew where to find Jesus, and it was right here in this garden. Jesus had a place that he would go to seek the Father. Kind of interesting. Do you have a place to go when you are needing to press in and seek the Lord? Do you have a quiet place that you like to kind of get away from the noise, unplug the phone or leave the phone behind and just seek the Lord? It's like Jesus had that place. It was the Garden of Gethsemane. Well, all that to say, we see in verse 2, it says, "And Judas also, which betrayed him, knew the place, for Jesus oft-times resorted thither with his disciples." So Judas knew. By the way, John doesn't mention the details that it was Gethsemane. We learn that from the other gospels, tell us that it was the Garden of Gethsemane. John's gonna leave out of this section some really interesting, and maybe you might even call it key features of the Garden Gethsemane story. Why does John the Apostle leave it out of his gospel? I'll show you what some of those things are as we go through it, but I think there is a reason that John doesn't cover all the details of this, and we'll look at that. But Jesus would go to Gethsemane, place to pray to the Father, and he went there regularly, so much so that his enemy, Judas, knew right where to find him. Well, verse 3, "Judas then, having received a band of men and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, cometh thither with lanterns and torches and weapons." When you got lanterns and torches and weapons, does that sound like a really good thing that's happening? I mean, I think of all kinds of things in history, but whenever you got lanterns and torches and weapons and stuff like that, usually it's a mob. It's a mob at night doing something they shouldn't. And we'll see this. And by the way, this is an unlikely group of people because you got the Romans, who the Jews hated, but they're marching with the priests and Caiaphas and the officers of the high priest. And you've even got Pharisees in the mix of this. So you got these Romans and Pharisees. You know, they don't like each other, but they're united under the same cause because they don't like Jesus. Now, how many of these, verse 3, a band of men, officers from the chief priests and Pharisees? We know from some of the other gospel narratives that, there were Roman soldiers in this group. But the New American Standard, if you have that translation, it correctly uses the word cohort. King James says a band of merry men, you know, like this word band, you know. Well, no, it's not a musician group, but it is a cohort. And what is a cohort? 1/10 of a legion in the Roman army. It could be as many as 600 soldiers that came to the Garden of Gethsemane. That's a big deal to have a cohort. In first century Roman arrests, they were performed by the Roman government and officials, including their army. And their top tier army, sort of like you might say their special forces to get Jesus. Question, why bring such a huge group? It's just one little dude from Galilee. Well, there's a lot of theories as to why the Romans brought so many soldiers, if they did in fact bring the full cohort of 600 men. And, you know, it could be that, you know, they knew that Jesus had disciples. You say, yeah, but that's 12. But do you realize by this time, Jesus had more than 100 disciples officially. The 12 were his closest disciples, but he had a lot of disciples by this time. Now, if you remember, some of them left because Jesus talked about his body, eating his body and drinking his blood. And a bunch of disciples left at that point. And yeah, he's talking about that. We're not into that at all. And some of those disciples left. So we know that Jesus has only the 12 with them, but the Romans, maybe they don't know, and they're thinking, we're gonna bring a SWAT team to make sure we don't have any problems. That's maybe one theory why they brought so many. Another theory is that there were other times they tried to apprehend Jesus, but couldn't because he slipped away. Do you remember, like, for example, in John 7, 44, some of them would have taken him, but no man laid hands on him. Then came the officers to the chief priests and Pharisees, and they said unto them, why have you not brought him? And the officers answered, never a man spake like this man. Then answered them the Pharisees, are you also deceived? So this was the earliest example where they were ready to apprehend him way back in John chapter 7. And then later on, there were people that wanted to stone him to death, but he slipped out of their midst, if you remember the stories. So maybe they're thinking, you know, maybe the, you know, religious guys, the officers and the chief priests said to the Romans, hey, this guy's slippery. You got to bring a big group because he might sneak away or slip out and nobody will know. You'll need to have a whole group in case we have to do a manhunt if he flees and runs and hides, you know, that kind of a thing. So maybe they were just afraid of losing him because he was able to slip away. But all that to say, they now are coming to the garden, but let's see what happens there in verse 4. Therefore, Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth and said unto them, whom seek ye? Now, was Jesus truly wondering, who in the world are you seeking? Well, as it turns out, we know that they are seeking Jesus. But Jesus, I think, is going to ask this question for a major reason that we may not think about unless you kind of think about the story and the way the Bible works. Speaking of which, here he is, this whole scene happening in the Garden of Gethsemane. One of the things we do is we compare, scholars have compared, I should say, the Garden of Gethsemane with the Garden of Eden. It's kind of an interesting compare and contrast. You know, the Garden of Eden was beautiful, delightful. Gethsemane was horrible. You know, you kind of think it starts out with Jesus, you know, suffering in agony. It's called Agony in the Garden is what a lot of your Bibles entitle that section of scripture. Eden, Adam and Eve parlayed with Satan. But in Gethsemane, Jesus sought the Father. In Eden, Adam sinned. In Gethsemane, Jesus suffered, but, you know, of course, with no sin. In Eden, Adam fell in his sin. But in Gethsemane, Jesus would conquer sin. In Eden, failure by day. But Gethsemane, there was victory by night. In Eden, Adam fell before Satan. Gethsemane, soldiers fell before Christ. As we go on, you know, in Eden, the human race became lost to sin. But in Gethsemane, none would be lost. In fact, it's kind of interesting because in John chapter 18, verse 9, we'll see that where it actually says that none of his disciples would be lost. Kind of interesting. We'll get into that as we proceed. And then Adam received fruit from Eve's hand. Jesus received the cup from the Father's hand. Remember, he prayed, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thy will. Jesus would willingly take the cup of suffering there in the Garden of Gethsemane. In Eden, Adam hid himself, but in Gethsemane, Jesus boldly showed himself. That's what we just read in verse 4. He walks out right to them. Who do you seek? I love that. And then in Eden, God sought Adam, and in Gethsemane, Jesus sought God. In Eden, Adam was driven out. In Gethsemane, Jesus went to the cross willingly. In Eden, the sword was drawn so that would keep Adam and Eve out of the garden. But in Gethsemane, the sword became sheathed when Peter had to put away his sword. In Eden, humanity was doomed to hell. But in Gethsemane, salvation for all humanity was about to take place. Just kind of an interesting compare and contrast of all the two gardens, a tale of two gardens, the Bible might be spoken of. But how thankful I am for the Garden of Gethsemane, because it would be right here that the whole situation where Christ would be crucified for the sins of the world, it would all take place right here. But like we said, Jesus wouldn't hide away here in our text. In verse 4, he just comes out. And he walks out right in bold sight and says, you know, whom seek ye? Now, it seems to me the cohort, the army and the offices of the high priest and what have you, their plan was, in case he disguises himself as just another follower, we're going to have Judas identify him with a kiss. That was their plan. And in case he goes hiding like he did before, where we can't find him, we're going to bring a big group of people to search. If he tries to slip away, we'll go after him. And this, in case there are many of his followers, we'll have an advantage with the large military. That's the cohort's plan. Jesus' plan here in the garden, he greets them and identifies himself. What's Jesus' army? Well, you might say 12 sleepy guys. That was his group. The 12 sleepy disciples are with him. But Jesus, he comes out, and why does he just go right to them and ask them, whom seek ye? this is one of those places in the Bible where I think you have to kind of think, why would Jesus ask something he already knows? Think about that for a second. So he says, whom seek thee? In verse 5, they answered him, Jesus of Nazareth. And Jesus said unto them, I am he. And Judas also, which betrayed them, stood with them. Bunch of stuff here. Jesus says, I am. But he doesn't really say, I am he, FYI. The he there is in italics, and I always like to remind you, you can cross that word out, especially in this context. Sometimes the translators try to add words to help clarify the translation, and sometimes it's helpful. But in this case, I believe Jesus was signaling something. As we often say, when he says, I am, he's linking himself to the I am of the Old Testament. He doesn't say, I am he. We're looking for Jesus of Nazareth. And he says, I am, ego in me. The same I am statements echoes back to Exodus when, you know, God's name, when he told Moses, I am that I am. Tell them I am hath sent me. And Jesus is saying, I'm the same. I am. So I see a connection here. Jesus says, I am. He's going to say it twice here in this evening. Now, check it out. Whom seek thee? And they answered him, Jesus of Nazareth. Can I just say, the title Jesus of Nazareth probably was sort of a title of Jesus that may have been derogatory. It would have been common to call a guy like Jesus, Jesus ben Joseph. The son of Joseph. But that wouldn't have been a good title for Jesus because we know that he really wasn't the son of Joseph. He was the son of God. But do you remember, what did Nicodemus say when he heard that Jesus was from Nazareth? Does anybody remember what he said? What good thing comes from Nazareth? You know, there's towns in America, like most Americans would say, what good thing comes from Portland, Oregon? It's the same thing where our cities become sort of the byword of a joke of a town. We hope to change that, by the way, as Christians. We want to shine the light of Christ. That's our goal. But that's the idea. Nazareth was known to be a sort of a hick town where nobody was from and nothing good was there. We're looking for Jesus of Nazareth. Could have been sort of just the title they gave Jesus because it was not meant to be positive. And then Jesus says, I am, and Judas also was there with them who was betraying him. But look what happens in verse 6. As soon then as he had said unto them, I am, they went backward and fell to the ground. Dominoes, man. What did it look like for 600 Roman soldiers to fall backward with all their, you know, armor and weaponry? Clink, 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 clink. Was it dominoes? Like, I want to check out this DVD when I get to heaven. Because this must have been quite a scene. How long did it take for them to get back up? You know, if you're wearing all that armor and stuff, and I just wonder, you know, everybody's like clink, 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 and then I'll kind of get back up. Now, why did Jesus do this? When I was a kid, I used to think, well, this was just Jesus giving them a small taste of what was potentially what he could have done. Now, we do know Jesus is going to say, don't you guys understand? I could call 10,000s of my angels. I'm not in trouble here in the Garden of Gethsemane. He's not at their mercy. He's doing all this purposefully and willfully. And so when I was a little kid, I think, well, he was just showing a little flexing of the muscles like, I am he. Clink, 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 clink. Any questions? And that could be the case. Just Jesus showing, I'm in control here, but I'm going to show you that actually I'm going to submit. Even as Jesus made himself of no reputation, took upon himself the form of a servant, and was obedient even to the death of the cross. This is what Jesus is going to do. But this is a little snapshot of what he potentially could have done. Jesus could have called, as he said, 10,000s of his angels. How many people did one angel kill in one night in the Old Testament? 185,000 soldiers, enemies of Israel. They're dead. So angels are, the warrior angels, like Michael seems to be a warrior type angel in the Bible, no problema, 185,000 soldiers. So these little 600 Roman soldiers, not a big deal. And Jesus says, I am he. But I think there might have been a greater reason why Jesus did it. It wasn't for his pride to show, you know, look, I could totally kill you all, but I'm not going to because I'm in a good mood tonight. That's not what's going on here. Check it out. There's a hint here. Verse 7, then ask he them again, whom seek thee? Now, do you wonder how they said it the next time? Jesus of Nazareth. Beautiful town, by the way, Nazareth. We like Nazareth. No, I don't know what they said, but I bet the tone was just a little different, you know? The first time, whom seek ye? Jesus of Nazareth. And then clink, clink, clink. And then he says again, whom seek ye? Jesus. I'm pretty sure they probably tuned in there. Again, got to get the DVD when you get to heaven. But verse 8, then it says, Jesus answered, I have told you that I am. If therefore you seek me, let these go their way. Now you might say, well, what position is Jesus in to do any bargaining with these guys? I think that's why he knocked over all the Romans. I think the Romans are like, we have to apprehend you. We're seeking Jesus of Nazareth. But Jesus saying, okay, I'm with you, but let these guys go. And Jesus is looking out for his disciples. He knew the answer who they were looking for, but Jesus was, you know, I think doing something to give them opportunity to, first of all, say what they were gonna do. That's something that the Bible gives people a chance to articulate with their mouth. It reminds me of Proverbs 18:21 that says, death and life are in the power of the tongue. And that's what these guys, they're saying, we're seeking Jesus of Nazareth. And they had to say that twice, what their intentions are. But also they're sort of realizing, man, we might want to be careful. Let's not fight on stuff that we don't have to fight about. Like, we'll let the disciples go. If that's what you want, as long as we're apprehending you. And Jesus works out that deal with them, and there's no questions asked. It's kind of interesting. So there's a couple things going on here. I think one, God always gives us an opportunity to answer because the power of the word is in the tongue. It's like they're in the Garden of Eden, since we're comparing. There was another time where God gave man a chance to reply to a question. Remember in Genesis chapter 3, verse 9, Adam and Eve sinned and they went and hid themselves and God said, Adam, where are you? Did God lose the only two people on the whole earth? It wasn't that. God didn't lose Adam and Eve. Then why is God asking, where are you? And Adam and Eve had to say, oh, over here, Lord. And they had to confess that they had sinned and eaten of the forbidden fruit. I think it's sort of like God's giving them a chance to acknowledge their condition before God before he can actually help them. Same with you. The Lord might even ask you the same question as in the Garden of Eden. Where are you? Not like God can't find you, but more, you might say, where are you at? Are you in a good place where the Lord, you're in right relationship with God, or has your sin separated you from God? God gave Adam and Eve a chance to confess that. In the same way, these soldiers were going to have to confess what their real intention would be, and that is to ultimately put to death Jesus the Messiah.
Pastor Brett Menter drawing important understanding for the divine sovereignty of Jesus and his obedience to God's redemptive plan unfolded in the Garden of Gethsemane. And there's more to come next time on Today's Word. And I trust you'll stay right there as Pastor Brett will also join me in a moment. But first, Today's Word is the radio ministry of Athey Creek Church just south of Portland, Oregon, where Pastor Brett Metter's the senior pastor. Our vision on Today's Word is to proclaim the hope of salvation and help people know Jesus through careful study of the Bible. We invite you to find out more by going to todayswordradio.com. If you've missed any portion of this message, you'll find all of Pastor Brett's messages online at todayswordradio.com. All right, I have Pastor Brett with me now. Brett, I know that there are people out there that are wondering about the name of your church, Athey Creek. You said it before, but can you repeat, how did you get that name?
Well, people say, how do you pronounce that? A, they, or, and I say, well, it sounds like atheist, but we are not atheists.
That's right.
But it's Athey. No, the way we got that name was we started with a different name, you know, 30 years ago. And as it turned out, somebody about 100 miles from here had the same name that we chose. So we quickly had to change. And our first church meetings were in a middle school, and that school was called Athey Creek Middle School. And it's because there's a little creek right next to the school called Athey Creek. And so we thought nobody will name their church Athey Creek. So we took that name. And you know what's kind of funny about that, Kurt, is we moved from that school about a mile away and built our church building. And right next to our building is a road called Athey Road. So the Lord kind of worked it all out. But it's a unique name. But, you know, it's funny how a name that's strange becomes very familial and happy. We just think it's just kind of a nice name for our church. Athey Creek Church is where we landed.
Absolutely. That's a great story. Thanks for sharing that, Pastor Brett. And if you'd like more information about Athey Creek Church, Pastor Brett Metter, or Today's Word, you can visit our website at todayswordradio.com. That's todayswordradio.com. Well, that's all the time we have. Next time, Pastor Brett will note why Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane in a revealing passage from Matthew's Gospel. Today's Word with Pastor Brett Metter is an outreach of Athey Creek Church in West Lynn, Oregon.